We'll begin the meeting. Meeting will come to order for the Capital Investment Committee. We have today a presentation of the 2008 Capital Investment Bill. Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, I would move House File 380.
Representative Hausman moves House File 380.
And then I will move the delete everything amendments to 380. We can act on that first, then members of the committee have theirs, and members of the audience can then.
Representative Hausman moves to delete all amendments. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, may I make a suggestion? At the appropriate time when the bills are going to be passed out to this gathering crowd, in order not to disrupt the presentation, couldn't that be done out in the hall rather than here? Because it looks like it's going to be a feeding frenzy, and I prefer to listen to Representative Hausman than the clatter of lobbyists picking up the bills. Would that be all right?
That sounds like a good suggestion, Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, I was going to say it usually goes pretty fast, and the three of us are going to disorganize ourselves for a minute. So, I think we'll just pause
and let them do that. What we could do in the meantime, we have a quorum, so we could move the minutes. Anyone have any chance to look at the minutes? Representative Silver.
We move the minutes of February 26th and February 28th.
Yes, Representative Silver moves the minutes of February 26th and February 28th. Any questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. And at this point, I just wanted to tell the audience that this is going to be the presentation of the Capital Investment Bill, and then we will reconvene at 6 o'clock tonight. We're going to recess and have, because of session today, we will reconvene at 6 o'clock tonight for markup and passage of the bill. But at this point, it's a presentation by Representative Hausman and the fiscal staff. Any questions to that procedure?
It worked for quite a while. I owe you the people of this.
And Representative Hausman, you let us know when you're ready to proceed.
Minimum wage salaries and $13 an hour. I'm working again. I got enough coming forward.
Okay.
Yeah, right now.
Representative Hausman, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one overriding theme on this bill is that it's set in the context of a forecast that speaks of a recession and jobs numbers that are a bit challenging for this state, and you will see that's reflected throughout in the presentation. So it's said in the context of Thursday's forecast. On Thursday, Senator Langseth and I were able to meet with the governor, and we acknowledged that does affect the size of this bill. As we talked about that, Senator Langseth particularly suggested that some of those issues of the size of the bill can be resolved in the conference committee. I can tell you, for me personally, I have a practical reason why this is probably the time to still reflect the same dollar amount as the governor and the Senate, and that is if we are in fact going into negotiation. It works. Probably the one person at this table who who understands this more than almost anyone is Ms. Peltola, because she's been through this. If you come in with two bills like this, one side does not want to do all the cutting. At a certain point, they look to the other side to also cut. And if you start from two different bases, the impact of cuts at the lower level are more significant on the other body. And so going into negotiation when you are in a frame to cut to a lower number works a little better if you come in with similar size packages. So that is the reality we have before us. What I thought would be helpful, because we do take this very seriously, members have in their packet a description from the Minnesota Department of Finance for the whole issue relative to state GO bonds. And the part that I would particularly call your attention to is on the second page, the middle of the page, where they describe the state's debt management policy and the five guidelines. And then what follows are charts that indicate how we do relative to those five guidelines. And I think as we discuss what is appropriate to do as we negotiate this bill through the process, that would be a helpful thing to take a look at. I want to acknowledge that in the House we have a slightly different process than the Senate, and in the House fiscal chairs have done a huge amount of work in their committees to get ready for this point. We're fortunate to have both Representatives Carlson and Solberg on this committee. They are, and by the way, Madam Chair, you may know that we have numerous meetings scheduled over this meeting. The Assistant Majority Leaders and other leaders are meeting right now, so our Ways and Means and Finance Chair are not able to be here. I think the Republican Caucus has a caucus at 10:30, and I believe the Democrats do at 10:45, so we have a rather brief time to present the bill. We're hoping that we're back in this room by 6 o'clock tonight. I don't know what the nature of the floor discussion and the length of that would be, but our hope is that we would be back at 6 tonight for passage of this bill. Representative Solberg, as you know, is our numbers person, and he gets a lot of credit for looking at all the dimensions of this from that perspective. I do have to particularly, I suppose there's probably no two members who put more time in than Representative Wagenius and Representative Hansen. There was huge, huge work on all the details of that environmental piece, and they did take very seriously two things in their presentation: maximizing jobs and maximizing federal dollars. And I think they did some creative and out-of-the-box thinking, and as we go through the spreadsheet, you'll see some of that reflected. The one finance chair that I need to apologize to is Representative Hilty, because his number one priority, which was the grant for municipalities for green building, a new program, that was a news bill, you may recall, a new program, the request was for $10 million. At one point, we had $1 million on our spreadsheet, and we thought, for a new program, that probably doesn't get us very far. But let me tell you about four initiatives that, in my opinion, are all somewhat linked, and hopefully all of those pieces can come together in discussion. One of those is that building, the grants for municipalities. Representative Breiling in her committee is working with Representative Saylor for a similar initiative specifically for schools. Representative Thiessen has had a project that has, I think, some real promise for the future. And Representative Rukavina, you may be hearing more about that. They all come together around an energy initiative that I hope has an opportunity to come together in maybe even a more aggressive package in the future. We'll just take a quick look at the spreadsheet. A word about both University of Minnesota and MinSU. We worked very closely with those institutions. We didn't decide any of these things arbitrarily. And I can tell you that though you've heard about Thorwell Hall, and we are strongly committed to that, in this instance, it isn't in this bill, because all of the projects couldn't go forward. And I wanted to help you understand a little bit about how the other two projects on the Minneapolis campus came to be higher priority. One of these is a governor's initiative or directive that directed the university specifically to increase by at least 5% compared to fiscal year 2007 the number of degrees awarded in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and health sciences disciplines. So the university very specifically in its planning takes seriously that that governor's directive. Additionally, there has been probably for 3 or 4 years some rather aggressive private fundraising on the Bell Museum, and at a certain point all of those private dollars need to be matched, and that project is going forward. I want to tell you just one thing about the Morris campus. We visited there, and they came to see me just recently, and in this whole move for carbon neutral policy, they tell me that literally in a matter of just a couple of years, that entire campus has the potential to be carbon neutral, a carbon neutral campus in Morris. And so there's such good work going on there. In the case of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, at $60 million for HEPR, all institutions have at least one project, not all campuses, but all institutions. And we got a sense of where the spread is, there really is significant spread across the state. I think of that, probably $37 million is spent in Greater Minnesota and $23 million in the metro area. The only thing we deleted in this section is demolition. It's just hard to get motivated when you're cutting back to fund demolition, and so that was the only one that was totally zeroed out. And these numbers, we didn't arrive at arbitrarily. There was discussion with MNSU about those. In the case of, on page 2, the Department of Education, there is language in the bill relative to Red Lake that Representative Breiling is fairly resolved that there is going to be a project finished. And when we'll get that language later, or can we maybe decide it right now? On page 16, on lines 16-8 to 16-17, is very, very tight language to say we really want to finish the project, and they need to work with the department as they determine that that this project is in fact pursued to completion. Some of you may recall, this is to Minnesota State Academies now, that when we toured for CHET, at the time there was still a feeling that that building would be renovated. Now they have decided that for their purposes, a new building is better, and so we are funding pre-design. They have not decided yet where that will be and whether that that existing building will perhaps be used by Shattuck, which is an adjoining school, so there are some decisions that haven't been resolved. Here I confess, Madam Chair, we may have inadvertently omitted a project we intended to, but I think there's safe numbers in the Senate bill, so again, for purposes of negotiation, it is there. Purpose Center for Arts Education. Representative Riley and I had a couple of very good conversations. We are very committed, very dedicated to the mission of that school, and raised a variety of questions for long-term planning. Again, they're funded well in the Senate bill, but perhaps there could be some ongoing conversation about future planning and where we go with that. It is by no means a lack of dedication to the mission of that school. On lines 93 to 95, you begin to see some of the of the kind of out-of-the-box thinking that Representative Wagenius and Representative Hansen showed, because to understand flood hazard mitigation grants, you also have to look at lines 175 to 178. Where there, through the RIM reserve, there are additional dollars targeted for flood mitigation, not only to the Southeast Minnesota flood area, but to Austin and the Red River Basin. The idea there is to, again, maximize federal dollars as we do that. Representative Wagenius, did you have lists you were handing out today, or is that going to be later?
Representative Wagenius.
We have those. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Houchin, we have those lists here, and it's your option whether you would want to.
And they are copied?
Yes.
I would say, Tejas, I think we will. What they tried to do, because there's a lot of designation of counties and local areas, I think they're making it a little easier for you to find it by some of the lists, so the pages will get those to members. How many? You have three different. How many spreadsheets? Three?
Madam Chair, one of the lists is the list that we received from the Department of Natural DNR Parks. And it talks about their deferred maintenance and their projects for parks. And this is part of their 10-year plan. We reference their 10-year plan in this bill, but only reference this particular biennium. So the lists are being handed out with which projects are involved, and you'll see also which legislators will see projects in their districts. Similarly, with Met Council, there is a list of specific projects because there's only one large number, and it was the Met Council's asking number, original asking number. And there's finally a list of trails and listing which trails are in here because it's not as clear. I won't say it's not as clear, but you have to really dig in order to see it.
So the copies are just to make that a little bit easier for you to figure out. On line 146, I'm going to have an author's amendment this evening, and it hasn't been drafted, but we'll try to get this to committee members as early in the day as we can. I'll just note that for Ms. Nash, or so that all members of the committee have a chance to see that author's amendment before tonight. It is basically errors in drafting or rearranging sections. One of them where it clarifies intent is on line 146. You may recall we happened to be going down a residential street when we talked about the lighting. We weren't too interested in lighting on a residential street, and the language that we're adding in the author's amendment makes it clear that is for parkland and trails and not lighting of residential streets. So.
And we have a question from Representative Hollis.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hollisman, it's not a question. It's just to alert members that we have a Republican caucus at 10:30, and I'm going to start heading that direction now, and I'm sure a few will stay here, but we have a very small bill on the House floor today that we have to caucus, I guess. My question is, can we leave our material here?
No. No? Somebody else is using
it? There's meetings in between when we will come back at 6. So if you want it to be saved, you should put it in your packet.
Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Under PCA, you may have had heard the discussion about the landfill cleanup issue. There's been a lot of discussion about that, and there is now a decision there to use revenue bonds as a way of funding that, and we can talk a bit more about that when we get to questions. Under Water and Soil Resources Board, the one thing that has caused a little bit of consternation is the issue again of another new program, which is the RIM Clean Energy Program. I think there again we were looking for ways to assure jobs rather than subsidies, and to maximize federal money. And Representative Wagenius, later when we get to questions, you might show the language in two areas of the bill where, in fact, we are not only growing the resource, but there's the direction to move toward using that as energy. And if you would note those two pages for further. On the Minnesota Zoological Gardens, you may remember last year we had the info and infiltration issue. That has now been included under asset preservation. So we haven't forgotten that. It's just it now appears in asset preservation. Wherever you see Trump highway bonds, all of those issues were in the transportation bill. So on line 205, the Department of Transportation Exterior was in the transportation bill. The Mankato District Headquarters, Carver County, Rochester, the Urban Partnership Agreement, Trunk Highway Bonds, all were in the transportation bill. So all of those, it's not that we are not funding them, but that they have already appeared somewhere else. For Amethyst Sports Commission, though all were worthy, we just took the first and second priority in Rochester and Blaine. In each of these, we didn't often go much beyond the first, second, third priorities. In the case of public safety, that was probably the most painful for me in this committee. That was, you may recall that we had the Anoka County facility in, and this was really, really difficult because the governor and the administration are proposing a very targeted Camp Ripley in Southeast Minnesota investment. Representative Tamar spent a lot of time on this and agreed with the governor and the administration. However, again, language in on page 43, he very specifically directs the department to take it a step further and tell us, where should these be? Here's the reason for Representative Tamar's concerns. And that is the operations of the BCA lab. If these labs are built other places, do we then compete for scientists and does it drive up the cost of the state if they are in a competitive marketplace? So there is a direction to the department for much more specific advice in this instance. I will tell you, however, all of those centers are funded in the Senate bill. In the case of the Department of Transportation and, as you see, following Metropolitan Council, we are moving to a very different future in terms of a transportation option or choice. We are driven to that for a number of reasons. One is, as we look at all of our economic competitors, everybody else is moving more aggressively, not only in public mass transit, but in intercity rail. Wisconsin and Illinois have been in that game for some time. They have operations in their budgets for intercity rail. And so we're sort of drawing a picture with a section on Department of Transportation and Metropolitan Council, and that is that we connect between other states, and that is to Chicago. MnDOT is directed in this bill to work jointly with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation and to have a state plan before some of these corridors can go to the federal government and before we can move forward. There really needs to be a state plan, and so that language is clear. We also indicate that we intend to link regional centers in the state. In the transportation bill, there was already language that extends the North Star up to Rice, Minnesota, or study language, I guess, Representative Leader, wasn't it? And we add the other two here, the North Shore Express, I think they call it something else now, and what some are dubbing the Southeast Express, the connection to Rochester, which is long overdue. Line 246 is the Minnesota Valley Railroad. We heard that bill in the Transportation Committee. The request is much larger. We asked them at the time, could that be phased? and they suggest a phasing over about 4 years. So we have started year one. If those of you who toured may remember, this is a train that goes right now 7 miles an hour, and we could hardly see it moving, and this allows products to be shipped more quickly there. And because the big need this year in transit corridors is funding, is matching federal money for the central corridor, that obviously is the centerpiece. But what we're showing everyone is that we're moving forward with a system. And I've said many times, really all central corridor is it just connects everything we're doing on the west side with everything we're doing on the east side. Though all of these corridors, I would say specifically Cedar Avenue and Southwest, need more money this year, I am assuming that after the passage of the transportation bill, that Metropolitan Council will need some time to figure out how that money will flow in that bill to determine how we begin to change the funding for some of these corridors. So it is as much symbolic as anything that we are building a system. Representative Junkie, would you talk to us a little bit about Veterans Affairs and the thinking about the priorities there?
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Veterans Affairs, you're going to have to look in two places, this bill and our bill that's coming out of for the department bill in our committee. Obviously, we're concerned with moving it with projects that are ready to go. Such as Candy Eye County has been was supposed to be done 2 years ago, and so we want to move forward with that. The big one, obviously, is Minneapolis, and we have a large campus there. And talking with Minneapolis legislators as well as others, what we want to do is sit down over the next few months, and that will be in our bill, to discover what's the best use for not only that home, but for maybe a regional type delivery of veteran services down here. And so if you look at, there's probably close to $75 million of needs out there over the next 4 to 6 years, and we need to understand how that is all going to play in. So we are building new beds around the state, but we are also doing some planning on the Minneapolis campus along with it, Madam Chair. So the rest of them, Silver Bay is matching money that came last session, and it's matching federal match dollars. Again, realize the other problem with a lot of the Veterans Affairs, as requested, they requested both our third share plus the federal two-thirds, which if we put that in the bonding bill, it'd actually be 1.5 times the cost, and we carry it, and then when the cash comes back, it goes in general fund. It just makes no sense that way, and so we need to figure out how we can work with that, and it'd actually take a cash infusion to do some of these projects, and we got cash problems this year. So all that came into play. But again, we're meeting with the Senate and others, and we're going to put together a plan that I think will make everyone very happy in the future.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Department of Corrections, we funded the first and second priorities. Under employment and economic development, I suppose there's no issue more controversial than the issue of arenas and convention centers. And I will tell you, in preparation for today, I read Greater Minnesota papers. And there is a common theme. The people who came to my office were usually the chambers. And this is the kind of theme that I heard over and over again. In these regional centers, if there was a possibility of drawing from areas around, the quote is, if blank city offers amenities that young families want, offers activities on a large scale, some of those who've moved away may choose to stay. And that is, I think, kind of a shorthand way of saying it is probably in everyone's best interest not to have only one huge metro area where everything happens and then the rest of the state sort of struggles, but to say, how do we build regional centers and then connect them with transportation corridors in a way that allows regional centers to flourish as well? So that, I suspect, will be one of those hard-fought sections of the bill. In the case of Public Facilities Authority, we, by the way, for the first time on this spreadsheet, have pulled that out. It's often been under DEED, and I think that's been a misunderstanding about that as an agency. So thanks to Ms. Viewers, we have a little better clarity on that. And you will notice that all of our touring of all of those projects all over the state paid off. In lines 343 and 344, we went above the governor's recommendation by $5 million in each case. In the case of WIF, we actually matched the agency request. We didn't quite match it in terms of the capitalization grant. But that message is just heard loud and clear. I should tell you that on page 61, because of unique circumstances in Litchfield and Wilmer, you may remember the dairy industry, I think, right, in Litchfield, that there are complications of industry growth and other development, and in both of those cases on page 61, you see we carved out not a complete lifting of the cap. What we worked with the department staff to determine what's the number that we could help them and still and not hurt anyone else. And so we, together with the staff, came up with that number. Under Minnesota Historical Society, the big request there had been the visitor center. That is in some transition, and so it's not that we don't have huge support for the Minnesota Historical Society, but that largest request is we're in discussion about transitioning. Representative Junkie made a strong case for increasing the county and local historic preservation grants. And it's not often that we double their request, but in this case, the case he made for that encouraged us to do that. Representative Solberg, I think, worked on the Oliver Kelly Farm and determined that that the staging of that was such that it was the language pre-design and design for Kelly Farm. At the end, you see a number of cancellations. The Lewis and Clark one was in our bill last year. That is a multi-state project, and because some of the money is spent across state lines, the bonding didn't work for them, so that is the bonds are canceled, and we put in a comparable general fund allocation. In the case of the Northwest Busway, they've even renamed this now. This is line 391. That used to be called the Northwest Busway. Now it is called Bottineau Boulevard, and they are beginning to shift their thinking from busway to LRT corridor. And the way the federal government works, you really sort of have to start over because the designation in law is so specific. And so, again, we show them back under the Met Council as Bottineau Boulevard, but that's what the Northwest Busway is. And then University of Minnesota notified us that there was some additional money for the Teaching and Technology Center from 2003 that had not been spent, so we were canceling those. So the one other major issue in this bill, of course, is are those two different approaches to funding housing and biomedical research. The housing portion is on page 81, sections 45 and 46. They use their bounding authority. There are a number of arguments to that. One of them is when they bond for nonprofits, as might be the case with Citizen Social Service, for example, The rules for state bonds were such that it often raised the cost of the project. And we want those dollars to go as far as possible. And so we are suggesting this other alternative. When they let the bond, the arrangement for nonprofits is more advantageous. We have acknowledged that that money has primarily been targeted for this long-range supportive housing initiative to end homelessness. So we have put an additional $2 million that is, it is also flexible, but acknowledges that there is need also for emergency shelter, transitional and short-term housing. That is very fast, members. And we'll perhaps start with questions. We have maybe only five more minutes, and then we could take more questions.
Any questions from members? Representative Finkelstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman, just a procedural thing. I'm looking at the spreadsheets, and to the far right column, and maybe this is a question for Ms. Durs, is sometimes the little hash mark means zero, and sometimes, depending on if the column is indented over on the left side, it means it's within the above number. So maybe if we can get a clarification on that.
Madam Chair, Representative Tinglestad, that's correct. If it's indented, I couldn't include numbers because then it would have added up in the total. So there are just hash marks for those projects. But for all lines that are not indented, the number is the total.
Did that answer your question, Representative Tinglestad? Any further questions from members?
And then
is that Representative Hausman?
I asked Representative Wiginius if you noted those couple places in the text where you referenced the energy. Do you have those now, or could we do that later?
We can.
Representative Wiginius.
We can talk about it right now. There are two specific areas where, okay, let's look at the outcome first. The outcome is folks want to encourage cellulose for fuels. So with that as the outcome, we picked two areas in which we could have great outcomes with that. And one is wildlife management areas, and we have said for both on future and past that DNR is to come to us with a plan for cutting that cellulose, which for restoration purposes will be a native prairie, and that plan should have for cutting cellulose should be very mindful of managing for wildlife, mindful of water, mindful of seeds, prairie seeds, so making sure that they continue to propagate. So DNR is to come to us with a plan on that. And why don't I let Representative Hansen talk about Bowser, which is very similar language.
And then if you have pages, I don't know if there's reference for pages.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chairman Scalzi. If you'd look on page 36 in the RIM Reserve, in line 36, 0.8 and subsequent in that section to 36.24, we clarify RIM Reserve to support soil and water quality, support fish and wildlife habitat, reduce flood damages. That was an important addition, and other public benefits. And then we reference 103F.515 with restored native prairies. And then on lines 37.8, we have the board, that's the Board of Water and Soil Resources, is authorized to enter into new agreements and amend past agreements to allow for restoration. In current law, there's a management process where every 3 years you can manage, and that may be done by burning. What this would do is allow that management to allow for harvesting. And so you are able to go right now and be able to get the cellulosic material, manage those existing rim acres and the new rim acres for energy production, so it doesn't, but also so it doesn't devalue natural habitat and the water quality benefits. In addition, those rim acres are able to attract some federal money as well. So we provide that language in the regular rim reserve so we can go out and get existing acres, and as Representative Wagenia said, in wildlife management areas, and then also in the wetland replacement due to road projects, because when there's a wetland replacement, you're also generally protecting some upland around that that provides for that prairie restoration.
There's a question from Representative Wagenia.
Not a question, but Chair Houston had asked about which page this is on, and this is on page 25, starting in line 25.7. You also want to note that there is language both for DNR and for Bowser to start counting the restorations that are made, the plantings that are made, that we expect at some point will be able to be counted for carbon sequestration. We don't have those measures yet of, say, an acre of prairie and how much carbon does that sequester. We know it's going to happen. So we're asking these agencies to start keeping just an account book so we can show that Minnesota really is on that path of carbon sequestration. So I just hadn't mentioned that before, but that's another piece of this puzzle.
Very good. Any further comments? The Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, I think our time is up because I know both caucuses are meeting now, and I would just, in conclusion, note that the House Research Bill Summary says draft. So much of this is so last minute, and staff works exceedingly hard, and I just have to say, We can't say thank you often enough. I know that there were staff here until midnight Friday night. They worked all day Saturday. They worked all day Sunday, and probably at least 7 or 8. And so to Deborah Dyson, to Kathy Novak, to Corinne Zewers, to Dan Payne, to Larissa Peltola, and of course, what would we do? Got a little choked up here.
What would we do without Jenny Nash and
Lori Nissel through this entire year to coordinate the tours? It's incredible.
It is. It's truly incredible, and you've done a wonderful job, Chair Houseman. And would you like to... And then at this point, would you like to move your deed all amendments?
I have one author's amendment tonight that just cleans up some things. For example, if Minnesota Zoo is here and can't find their language, I think there was one section of it that was... Oh, is this in the right place? Okay. Anyway, and we'll try to get that delete all as soon as it's drafted to members so that they can see that. And then we are scheduled to be in finance tomorrow morning and in Ways and Means tomorrow afternoon, and processing on Wednesday and on the floor on Thursday.
And at this time, staff says that we need to adopt the amendment. So...
We voted already.
We did.
I thought we did.
Yeah, we did.
A little confusion up here.
We need to read.
So what we'll do now is we'll adjourn and we'll come up for our new meeting.
Adjourn.
We'll recess.
Recess. Okay, we'll recess until 6 p.m. tonight in the same room.
Thank you. Meeting will come to order. Recess is over, and
we'll be working on the 2008 capital investment bill. So we'd like to keep it a little quiet so we can get going here. Representative Hausman, do you have any comments to begin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't repeat anything I talked about this morning, but as I was talking about the bill, I realized there was one fairly significant piece of the bill that I failed to mention. In our conversation with the governor on Thursday morning, he indicated a commitment to Vermilion. And there is a lot of history around this. We have put some money in this bill for Vermilion. And I think there are several reasons why we put it in this bill. My understanding, and Representative Singlestad and Representative Wagenius can, well, I think it's even Representative Carlson, there are a few people here on LCMR, that a proposal was made to use the Environmental Trust Fund for this, and that in fact the LCMR decided, I believe unanimously, that they didn't want to go in that direction. I don't know if the committee has had distributed to them a Lake Vermilion proposal timeline that talks about the LCCMR process, goes back to September of 2007 and then January of 2008. And one of the things they discuss is, should it be cash, should it be GO bonds, et cetera, so there's a discussion of that. But we do have that money in the bill, and this would take it to conference committee to have an opportunity to discuss that. My understanding is LCMR is in the audience if people should want any clarity about that and whether you want to spend any time on that particular issue. But I think other than that, I can tell you the sort of heartbreaking conversations I've had since this morning for all those projects that don't have enough money in the bill or don't appear in the bill. Those are painful, painful discussions. As you know, we started this process, I think, with $3 or $4 billion worth of requests. Through the committee process, I think we narrowed that down to $2 billion, and obviously this is a much smaller bill, and perhaps it will be much smaller than that yet at the end of the process.
Very good. Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I just want a clarification on this Lake Vermilion proposal timeline. Is this what's happened, or is this what the LCMR put out, or is this what you put together?
No,
Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, this comes from LCMR, I believe.
No?
No, it doesn't. It came from Representative Carlson.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I received this from LCMR today. But the timeline that is presented here, just so everybody's clear on it, the January 14th date, that's information that was included that actually came from the governor's budget book. That doesn't reflect any LCCMR activity. But October 30th, for example, on the backside would reflect the LCCMR discussion and position. But the 14th is the governor's most recent comments in the budget book.
Representative Hansen, did you have a question? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. The amount proposed in the bill, if that is the question, at this 15.5 was a number given to me by Bob Meyer, who is the lobbyist for the DNR, or the Intergovernmental Relations person, I should say. The final number is not there. That is about as close as we can get without having a final number.
That's for land acquisition.
Excuse me, Representative Union says only acquisition, no development.
Yes. Oh, perhaps minimal development.
Representative Tinklestead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's four or five of us here on bonding that also serve on the LCCMR. And just a note about the information here on the timeline, that it was very thoroughly discussed. I mean, I'm trying to think of how many hours total, maybe four, five, six over the last several months. And we got to the point where we were talking to bond counsel, or the steps just prior to that, as far as what it would mean for future legislatures to be obligated on the debt service piece of that. And I think with the October 30th meeting, where the motion was adopted unanimously, I think sends a strong message And as you recall, the new makeup of the LCCMR is five House, five Senate, and seven citizens, most of whom are appointed by the governor. So it is a very well-represented group, and I think, you know, the group felt it was a serious discussion, thorough discussion, and their conclusions were that the funding should not come out of the LCCMR package from the Environmental Trust Fund. Thank you.
Any further questions for Representative Hausman on her bill? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I'm still not clear that the LCMR, do they have a position on the Vermilion becoming a park if we don't take it out of the trust fund?
And could that question be answered by the representative from LCCMR?
Or Representative Dean? Or Representative Tingleston? Somebody?
Representative Eugenia.
It is my recollection that there was no formal recommendation from LCCMR on purchasing it, but I think it's fair to say that people really liked it. Would that be a fair statement, do you think, Representative Carlson, Representative Tingleston?
Representative Tingleston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think probably the best sentence about this is from the October 30th minutes, where it says, members further discussed and agreed to recommend to DNR that they request funding for Lake Vermilion State Park through the regular capital bonding process, and so that it would be outside of the LCCMR, the Environmental Trust Fund.
And so then I would assume from this is that we would wait for the governor to present a recommendation and a supplemental capital bonding recommendation at this point. Okay, any further questions to the bill? Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, Chair Hausman, from this morning we have a couple of new handouts. If you could just clarify, what are they different from what we had in our packets this morning? Is there some updates?
If you're talking about, there has been no change on the spreadsheet, and the only changes to the bill are those that I have an author's amendment, and if you, Madam Chair, I would certainly be happy to move the author's amendment now if that is. The spreadsheet and the language of it.
Representative Hausman moves the A-10 amendment. I think all of the members have that A-10 amendment in your packet.
And Madam Chair, I'll just briefly talk through. These are all, I believe they would be categorized as technical and non-controversial. 1-3 is a change suggested by Minshew for language. Lines 1-4 through 1-8 are the genius language, which to make sure that when we're talking, I mentioned this morning, that Grand Round Lake lighting, mm-hmm. we're not interested in doing lighting on a residential street. We want to make sure that that lighting is park, trail, and property. Line 111 was language suggested by the MCCA, again, language change. Lines, I think 112 to 115 all came from Representative Hansen. Additional county references or, again, name change. 117, that's the Minnesota Zoo language, we're changing for planning to for pre-design and design. You may recall that Representative Tao discovered how crucial it is to use those words pre-design and design and not planning. He had to have a bill just for that. Line 119, that is the language that says Hennepin County and Ramsey County. We changed the word commit to spend money on light rail corridor. We discovered we had put the UEL, the laboratory, in the wrong city on line 20, 120. 123 to 124 is language suggested by Mr. Coleman. Nothing that just technical, I believe.
Minshew discovered we had misnamed Winona State University in one part of the bill. So I think that is roughly, as I said, technical things.
Questions from members on the A-10 amendment, as previously described. Any questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. We have the next amendment is, staff is making sure that we have the correct amendment passed out. I believe it's the A3 amendment, which is currently being passed out. And Representative Rusevina, this is your amendment. So as soon as members have a copy, maybe you'd like to proceed with your description of this amendment.
Well, Madam Chair, while the amendment's being passed out, just let me say, remind everyone of the discussion that I had with Dr. Sarah last week regarding the proposed university project for the bioscience building. And this amendment relates to that. First of all, members, it's not that I don't agree with that project and that proposal. But if you know, think about what's happening here, I believe in my bill that I'm carrying $10.2 million a year in a general fund appropriation built into the base to pay for the stadium, which our obligation was about $137 million of that. So now, if this passes in its current form, I have to, as it ramps up over 6 years, I believe it is, I have to carry $16.6 million for 21 years, and then it ramps down on either side of that. I'm concerned about the discrepancy between the Minshew system and the University of Minnesota. I'm also concerned about the fact that, you know, if you look on page one of this bill, the University of Minnesota is getting $136 million. But the University of Minnesota is not getting $136 million because they're getting another $233 million on top of the $136.
So, Representative Rusevina, would you want to move your
amendment? I'll move the amendment, Madam Chair. And what the amendment does is requires the university to raise one-third of the money Minshew system, and they have to for their other projects. It also deletes the University of Minnesota policies, which is the way it left the Higher Education Committee. And finally, Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, I think if the amendment were to pass, we'd have to adjust subdivision 3 on page 80 for the numbers so they work, because they would be reduced by approximately $40 million if my math is correct, over the life of this project.
Madam Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Maybe to the last point, Council can help you with that, Representative Rusevina.
Madam Chair and members, the amounts in the schedule of payments are maximum, so it's technically would still work. Okay.
And so with that, you know, I won't get into other parts of this proposal that I have some concerns about also. I'll save that till tomorrow in Representative Carlson's committee, but because I know he wants some excitement too, and he's concerned over there that everything will get taken care of here.
Madam Chair, a quiet morning would be just fine.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to speak against my friend's and my colleague's amendment.
Farmer friend, please.
That would be your loss. But I'm kind of shocked at my colleague who has spoken so eloquently about the students and the cost of tuition for our young people, the kids coming out of college today, ending up with $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 worth of debt. And this is where the university will get this extra $40 million. Certainly they will try to do private fundraising. But over a 5 or 6 year period, they're going to try and raise $120 million. This will be difficult. on top of raising the private finance for the stadium. Members, aside from the students, which is probably my biggest concern, this particular dollar figure that we take out of these buildings is just more money that is taken away from research. So, members, this is not a good amendment for our students. It's not a good amendment for the research and development that creates jobs of the future. I hope we vote it down.
Representative Solberg has a question.
Madam Chair, I would speak for the amendment in this respect. My experience has been when we've had a bonding request, let's say for North Central Experimental Station in Grand Rapids, which has no tuition base, they are still required to get the one-third match. And they take it either out of their program that they have or go out and raise a special fund from private industries as well and make the one-third commitment. So I think it's fair and consistent. I'm strongly for this proposal. I think it's research and development is extremely important, but I do think there is a fairness issue. And in testimony before the committee a couple of days ago, I thought the university gave at least a hint that they would be able to live with it.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Representative Fulberg's comments. We're asking the university at this particular point to raise $250 million in private capital between the university stadium and these particular buildings. Your Grand Rapids experimental station, their one-third was nowhere near $250 million. $250 million.
Well, Madam Chair, if I can just...
Representative Solberg.
Just to that point, the Grand Rapids doesn't have the kind of an alumni association or other people associated with it either. It's an experimental station.
Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could we hear from the university on the amendment?
Is there someone here from the university who could address this issue? And we have with us Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Richard Fitzenreiter, the Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer at the University of Minnesota. As I mentioned the other night to the committee, this amendment would shift approximately $2.7 million of additional annual debt on the university to pay for the switch from the 80-20 to the two-thirds, one-third. And I think the committee needs to know that if we don't raise that through fundraising, and as I said at the time, we'll do our darn best to try to raise as much as we can for these buildings through fundraising, at the end of the day, we still will build the buildings and we will issue the debt. And as I continually said, more often than not, that definitely falls on tuition because there aren't students in these research buildings to offload that cost on. So it does, more often than not, fall on the undergraduate students at the university. That's just the reality of how it works in the end. As I said, we'll try our darndest not to have that happen, but the committee needs to know that that, at the end of the day, is often how it falls.
Representative Rutavino.
I'll let Representative Mahoney add his hand up so he can.
Representative Mahoney.
All bad cleanup.
Go ahead. Don't fight over it. Representative Mahoney.
You know, when you're going to get the third out, you want to do it yourself. Mr. Fitzenreiter, would that be just the students at the Twin City campus that would be affected by that tuition increase, or would it be system-wide? Duluth, Twin Cities, Rochester, Crookston, Morris?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do a system-wide budget. It isn't that we just decide, well, gee, we've got an extra amount of debt, let's put it on Crookston or Duluth or the Twin Cities. It's an enterprise budget. So it's, here's how many resources we have, here's the expenses the university faces, and we put it on the table and make the allocation decisions and the tuition decisions basically after we know how much state money we have every year.
Well, Representative Ruth, Madam Chair, if I could, Representative Mahoney, you know, everybody comes here with a wish list, a Christmas list, and, you know, looking at you, you probably didn't get everything you wanted for Christmas either. So, yeah, probably about zero. But, you know, members, I think the university has the wherewithal to raise this money, and as I said, I don't want to see the discrepancy grow. I'm already carrying 10.2, I believe it is, this year for the stadium. Now, one could argue that the same thing stands for the stadium, Representative Mahoney. The students are paying for the stadium. If I recall, the stadium was about a $300 million project, or was it up there in that range, Mr. Simpson Ritter?
280.5.
280-something, and we got $137 million from the state. What percentage is that? That's not 80-20. That's not even close. So, you know, the students are paying that for the stadium. That shoots your argument there, Representative Mahoney. This is a question of fairness, and the university has the wherewithal. They have the alumni. They have the contacts. They already have one building name in this process. And I understand that the university is extremely important to the state of Minnesota. I also understand that there are a lot of other projects that aren't in this list of projects right here that were as important to communities across the state of Minnesota. And I'm just going to reiterate that what's fair is fair, whether it's in Moorhead or Inver Hills or North Hennepin, wherever, where the students are paying a part of that debt service, it also should be here on this project. You know, we all understand that the university helps drive our economy. Mm-hmm. But you also have to have a reality check here. And the reality of it is there isn't $136 million in this bill for the University of Minnesota. There's another $233 million on top of this. And to get that number down where it's a fair number, where the rules apply to everybody, to the university like they apply to the rest of the higher education system in this state, to me is a question of fairness. And I'd appreciate the support of the members on this committee that understand fairness and what our job is around this table.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to remind my colleague here that I didn't vote for that stadium.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, a question of Mr. Fitzenreiter. You know, when that one-third of the debt service was put in place, that was the Senate position, and it was resisted rather strongly by the House, because we felt that the cost was being shifted onto students. So that's, at least historically, was not a popular position in this body. But at the time it was put in, it was my understanding that that one-third debt service was not to be applied to facilities that were primarily for research. And if I'm correct in that, when did the university's position change then, where you're applying it in a way where tuition is going to be covering part of the cost? I have a pretty good memory, but not absolutely perfect, but remember those well.
I was a fiscal analyst in the House at the time when we ultimately caved to Mr. Redmond and Senator Moe's position on this two-thirds, one-third, the goal being that they, the Senate position was that they thought this would stem the appetite of higher ed for building projects if the university was picking up one-third. If I recall correctly, the rationale was that there were students who could, through tuition increases, help pay for that one-third. I do not recall any distinction between research buildings and other buildings at the university at the time, so your memory may be better than that, but I don't recall that particular distinction.
Representative Carroll.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's been a lot of years, and that's my general recollection, although we never wrote anything into any of the, wrote any language in dealing with that, but I guess I have to say I was quite surprised as we've moved forward in recent years that tuition is ending up covering part of the cost of tuition. Earning tuition is covering part of the cost of the research.
Any further comments? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Pfiffenreiter, the other day when you appeared before us, I asked you a couple questions. I asked you how the 20% was arrived at, and you indicated it was the Senate that did that. That was your answer. And I also asked how you would go about raising the money. And I got the impression from your answer that there hasn't been a whole lot of thought or consideration given by the university as to a fundraising plan. And I would think that the ability of the university to raise money for these facilities would be far greater than many other facilities that you would have at the university, because there are lots of interests in the state to see these facilities come into being. And it would seem to me that there would be a lot of prospects, a long prospect list of folks who potentially could contribute to this. And I personally don't think that 20% is a realistic goal, and I gave you an opportunity to kind of share something about what kind of planning went into that 20%, and your answer left me lacking. I'll give you another chance. Do you have something significant to say with regard to what kind of plan you have in place to be able to raise the money to meet the requirement here?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, we haven't a specific plan in place because this, as these set of buildings, as you know, this is our third attempt to get them. As I mentioned that night, we're going to work very hard to try to raise what in the 20% share was about $58 million for these buildings, 58.4. In the two-thirds, one-third, we'll jump to 96.4 million, and we're going to work hard to try to raise those dollars privately. I will tell you that Minnesota does not have a strong tradition of the corporate side giving the bricks and mortar. It's a tough deal. They prefer to give to programs, but we've been lucky on some of those buildings, and we're going to work hard to get that done. It's just, this is a step up, and as I mentioned that night, research buildings are difficult buildings. When you look at each one of these buildings, they all lose money, and laying on more debt than we had proposed. We came into the process hoping for a 90-10 share, ended up in the Senate with an 80-20, and we'll go to work still to raise money if this body decides it should be two-thirds, one-third. I just want to make sure the committee understands that it isn't that we intentionally take tuition to fund research buildings. We take the cost the university faces for utilities and debt and programs. We look at the state money we have. We look at what resources we can get inside the university, and tuition is one of those resources. It's not an automatic. It's just an implication that it often ends up, tuition plays a role in balancing the budget at the university.
Any further discussion on this amendment, on the A3 amendment? If not, we'll go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion carried. The next amendment is...
Madam Chair, then...
Representative Hausman.
I will suggest one other author's amendment because I'm on line 8014. We would need to change that number.
Would you repeat that page?
8014. Delete $233,600,000 and insert $195,600,000.
Do members understand? Did you get the numbers? She would, Representative Hausman is moving on line 80.14. to delete the dollar figure of $233,600,000 and insert $195,600,000. Any questions about that oral amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Oral amendment adopted. The next amendment is the A8 amendment. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, and this amendment that I didn't get done in time to get in the bill. It should be non-controversial. This goes back to session laws 2005, and we need to make a correction from back then in the bonding bill. This is dealing with the Wilmer Airport. They built a new airport, as you remember. Back then, in those days, lots of commitments were made for money, some state, some local, and the bulk of it federal. But in the original language in the bill, $1 million was to come to the state as their, as part of their monies for this airport project. And after the bill was written and it was passed, finance, the astute finance folks came forward and realized that the way it had been written, the bonds could not be let because they'd already started acquisition of the land out there. And as we know on the committee, once you start, you can't get the money. So it should have been structured different for new stuff at the time. It wasn't. But again, working with Deed, which is where this came from, over the fall, and now drafting this language, we're confident that this money, and there's already, by the way, a grant agreement in place that will be amended by the city, and Deed needs to wait for this to pass before they can officially amend their grant agreement. Again, long story short, the $1 million is still sitting over there. It has not been encumbered, so it's nothing out of this bill. It's simply specifying or making clear that that money can still be utilized. And that was the intent of everyone. I don't believe anyone is against this. And it should have been in the original bill as a correction, and I didn't get there in time.
Any questions on the A8 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. The next amendment that we have is the A9 amendment. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you want to move your amendment?
I would move the A9 amendment.
It's just being passed out, so we'll get. You can begin to explain it, but we'll wait until all the members have their
okay
papers.
On page 19 of the bill, there is a listing of projects that would be eligible to receive some funding from that $16 million flood mitigation amount that DNR manages. And a project that has been in the two previous bonding bills, the Oak Fork project, flood mitigation project, it's been funded to the tune of almost $4 million by the legislature to this date, is not on that. The Oak Fork is not on that list. And I think very well may have been an oversight. And so what my amendment does is to simply add Oak Fork Township to the listing of the projects that would be eligible to compete for that $16 million flood mitigation money. So that's simply what the amendment does.
Representative Lavinia, your committee heard this bill, or
yes, this did come before the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and it was not an oversight that Oak Park wasn't there. And I just want to explain to folks about the amount of money for flooding in this bill, and the impact that this amendment would have on this particular pot of money. Altogether, we have more money than the Senate, and I'm just going to go through it, but it's not unlimited money. We have $16 million in actually diking-type infrastructure projects, and then in another section of the bill, in the RIM dollars, there is $10 million for the Red River Valley, $5 million for 7 southeast flood-prone areas, $3 million to the watershed that is, feeds into Austin, for a total of $18 million. These are matched dollars by the federal government, so that the matches actually comes up to be 25.2. So we have a fair amount of money. However, the Oak Port project comes in at $10 million for 400 houses. It's just simply, without a substantial larger bonding bill, is just too expensive a project and would take away from too many of the others. And so I would oppose this amendment.
Representative Lenny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things. First of all, $10 million is what was it would take to complete the project, and we have realized all along that this was probably at least a 3, 4, maybe even 5-phase project. And all we're asking for here is to be on the list for some additional funding. And I know $10 million is not going to be possible, nowhere near that. The other thing I want to say is the rest of the funding in here is great and will help some of the projects in the Red River Basin, but it's not going to help flood mitigation projects for the city of Crookston, Roseau, or the Silkport area, because they're not going to be eligible for that RIM funding. The kinds of construction projects that they're trying to put in place in those locations are not eligible for that funding. And so I respectfully request that we be left on the list as we've been the last two bonding cycles.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had just one question as I was trying to figure this out. I learned from Representative Leader that Browns Valley, Crookston, Granite Falls, Austin, Moorhead, they all have local levies to build dikes. Is that also true of Oakport Township, that there would be a local levy to build dikes?
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman, the appropriations before have been subject to the 2% factor, so they've had to come up with a local levy to meet their match for the funding so far. And my amendment would require them to come up with that match again for any additional dollars that they would get.
Any further questions on the A9 amendment? No further questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion defeated. Next we have some oral amendments from Representative Lugenius, which were brought up and didn't get out of the revisor's office. So we're looking for these oral amendments. Representative Lugenius.
Yes. Hopefully these are very simple. I'll start on page 49. Language on 49.34 and on 50.01 was apparently language that we adopted from the rider language of the last bonding bill. And I have come to understand from some folks talking to me that Met Council has changed their process in giving us the money so we can delete from the sentence that says priority must be given to parks and rehabilitation and land acquisition projects. And I understand that Mr. Steffrud from that council is here and believes that that is the correct thing to do. And if that is not, I would hope he would step forward.
Is Mr. Steffrud here and going to give us
the answer? Yes.
He's nodded yes. All right.
In that case, I would move the amendment to delete that sentence.
Amendment has been moved. Would you repeat the amendment for the members?
Okay. The amendment starts on page 49. It's line 49.34 after the period, beginning with the word priority, and on to the next page, the first sentence, 50.1. We're just going to delete those two, that line.
Do members understand the oral amendment? Any questions about that oral amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. And did you have another one?
I did. I'm on page 29 now, and I'm looking at deleting lines 29.21 to 29.24. I understand that since this project was put forth, that Stearns County has stepped forward and is purchasing Kramer Lake Park. So this language is not needed. And so I would move to delete lines 29.21 to 29.24.
Do members understand that amendment, or did you have any questions for Representative Eugenius? Representative Singlestead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I see that's under Subdivision 27 with regional and local park grants. So the $750,000 that's noted for Cramer Lake now would then be available for other parks within that local parks grant fund.
Representative Eugenius.
I think I would leave that to the discretion of Chair Housman.
Representative Housman, did you have any comments?
Madam Chair, I'm just looking at the language. It doesn't seem to suggest that money would move from one to another. I mean, the option is to just deduct it from that total of regional and local parks. That is my proposal. So we would delete this and then delete those lines, and then on 29.3, that figure would be reconciled accordingly.
Would it be the figure on, Representative Eugenius, would it be the figure on 29.3 or the figure on 20? Oh, yes, there it is, I see it. 14, okay. Do all the members understand that amendment? Any questions on that oral amendment?
Madam Chair?
Representative Housman.
If she would then incorporate, since she's deleting, if she would just incorporate in her amendment on line 29.3, the new total, $13,892,000. Yes.
Do members understand that as well? That the total has been changed and the language has been deleted. $13,892,000. Any further questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hausman, I know that when there's a large bill and all of a sudden some money becomes available, it's very tempting. I'm very tempted to insert a project, but I think it's very important to give the chair flexibility. And, you know, at the end of the day, the total number we're going to have here is going to be less than what we move out of the house. And so I think that it's important to show that we can reduce and we can move towards that. And although I'm very tempted to insert a project, I will not. And I would encourage that we deduct that $750 from the total.
And that's the intent of the amendment as presented by Representative Eugenius. Any further comments or questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oral amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The next amendment we have is the A14 amendment, which is going to be passed out now, and that is Representative Erdahl's amendment. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
As it's being passed out, did you want to move?
I will move the A14 amendment.
Representative Erdahl moves the A14 amendment for consideration.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. This is such a small amendment that were not for $164,000, it could be called technical. But what this is, that many of you have were with on the bonding trip to Annandale and visited the shoot house there. It's a law enforcement tactical training center that serves the metropolitan area, serves actually nationally police forces coming in from across the country. And it is an existing shoot house. I think that's an important point. And they just made a very specific request, the fact that it was $164,000, not, you know, round it off to 170 or something, I think is an indication that they were trying to actually put into this what they really felt it was going to cost them to renovate this shoot house and to continue to make it accessible to people from across the state and across the country. And because of its proximity to the Twin Cities, I think it is easier for men and women with limited time to go there and train. That discussion came up a little bit when the folks from Camp Ripley were here last week, and we discussed that. Basically, What I'm asking to do is that we take $164,000 from their $4 million appropriation from the shoot house that they plan on building at Camp Ripley, and switch it to Annandale. I don't know if you know what difference that will make to them, but it will make a great difference to the Annandale Tactical Training Center. I'm just thinking that we're going basically switching money, just a little bit of it, a small fraction, from one shoot house to another. I think in the end we'll wind up with having two very serviceable tactical training centers. And, of course, if you don't want to do it that way, there was this other little $750,000 that just came up, and, you know, I would certainly be amenable to, however, Chair Hausman, who I greatly respect and appreciate the work she has done, would like to do this. But that's my amendment at this time. I would appreciate the support on the committee on basically just, again, going from one shoot house to another and winding up, I think, with two very good projects.
Are there questions or comments by members of the committee? Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, maybe Representative Rudolph can comment how all this interacts. But we looked at a shoot house need in Alexandria when we were out there. We did look at the one that you're referencing there in Annandale, and it's my understanding that the project for Metropolitan State Minneapolis Community College is going to have a shoot house or shooting range or whatever they're calling
the
it.
Range. I think,
they call it, but it sounded as though it's going to be quite similar. I think they use slightly different terminology. My question of you, Representative Erdahl, is how all that interacts. It looks like we have at least three in the works here, and I don't know if there are others that are already built somewhere in the state or not.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, first, the one that you were referencing, I believe, is just a range. It's not a shoot house. I think I asked them specifically that. And secondly, also last week, I don't recall the names of the people who were here. I guess when the commissioner was in here, we asked, so where are the shoot houses? What are the plans? Your training centers across the state. Remember, we asked if they would give us a report on that, on because I believe that the list of training centers that they had was from 1998, you know, 10 years old. And so we are asking for an updated list on that. But, you know, once again, well, this is an existing house that just needs a you know, by our terms, a relatively modest renovation compared to, and again, it's close to a lot of people. And that's why I think it's a valid you know, financial investment for us here in light of, you know, I agree with you if you're making the point that we shouldn't you know, be funding these things all over the state without an adequate plan. But this one does exist, and I think that we should make the investment.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, just for clarification, I believe that Camp Ripley already has a shoot house, and they're going to build a burn tower. And in public safety finance, we talked about the proximity of the Camp Ripley facility that they're building and the Annandale shoot house. And we talked about whether that was practical to continue with two. We didn't come to any conclusion, but it was discussed, and it was partly because of I got it mixed up with the burn house that we saw somewhere else. But I believe I'm right, and there's people that said I was right, that there is a shoot house at Camp Ripley already.
And they're nodding their heads.
And there is a burn house that we visited on the day that we went to St. Cloud.
Thank you for that. Any further questions of Representative Burns?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Representative Erdahl. If I remember right, this shootout in Annandale is operated by the city. I remember having a chance to talk to the police chief there. Very gung-ho guy. I think a great firearms instructor and a good guy. But I believe there were fees charged by the city of Annandale to other jurisdictions. Do you know what those fees are and how they would compare to fees that may be charged at Camp Ripley to potentially the same jurisdictions?
Madam Chair, Representative Burns, I don't know what the fees are. I think basically they are to cover costs. I don't think they're making a great deal of money on that. I'm assuming that that's the case with Camp Ripley as well. But I don't know the specific number.
Any further questions for Representative Erdahl's amendment, the A14 amendment? Seeing none, we'll go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion defeated. Any further questions from members of the committee regarding House File 380? I would say that, do you have any questions, Representative Burns?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is probably going to be for our chair, author of the bill. One of the things I know we've been talking about is the 3% debt limit. This is kind of a big question. Obviously, we've had the budget forecast come out and essentially reduce that limit. So it's kind of a two-part question is, how do we reconcile the fact that we have this tradition of 3% in our spending, and that's been something that we've been proud of here in Minnesota? And then second question is related to the $60 million in general obligation bonding in the transportation bill. And it was my impression that that would also count against our bonding limit.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some of you may not have been here in the very opening moments this morning when I talked about this, and I distributed the piece from the Department of Finance that talked about not one guideline, but five guidelines, and then the graph to give you a sense of historic perspective. I would say everyone is very respectful of that. That really is what has kept us sound. But I also started out this morning saying it is a recession, and we believe that this bill can put a lot of people to work. I don't think anyone is proposing that we don't take seriously the debt guidelines. We may, at the end of the day, end up with an $825 million bill. That is the number that it would be. For me personally, I have a challenge, and that is I'm going in to negotiate with a Senate author and a Senate bill. And I referenced at the time the one person at this table who has experience with that is Ms. Peltola. And what happens when negotiating parties come in, if we're here, this party is asked to cut and says, wait a minute, I didn't do all the cutting, you've got to cut, and you're cutting from a lower base. So I think we all agree there's going to be a lot of cutting. But if you're coming in into that negotiation on an equal playing field and cutting, it's, both are cutting from the same base. So I think we all know it will be the process in the next couple of days or next week or so will be painful because it will be cuts rather than additions. But this is, for me personally, I see it as a negotiating document, getting ready for conference.
And Representative Carlson, I understand you're ready with an oral amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. This goes back, Madam Chair, to the discussion we had with the Rucavina amendment. And if members would open the bill to page 79, and in line 29, after the period, I would insert the following sentence. The board must not use tuition revenue to pay for the university share of the cost for the projects approved under section 137.64. And I'll give this to the chair so that staff will have it, but I'll repeat it. Again, it would be the board must not use tuition revenue to pay for the university share of the cost for the project approved under section 137.64. Members, I'll move that amendment, and my memory is not that faulty. I did get some confirmation by a person in the audience that, in fact, when that policy was first implemented, it was to be placed against instructional costs, not research facilities. Something has changed through the years. The amendment is not dealing with other projects that they may have used tuition for, nor is it dealing with any in the future. It's dealing with this project specifically. But whether the amendment goes on or not, I would suggest that perhaps the Higher Ed Finance Division take a look at that whole issue in terms of how tuition is being used in areas outside of instructional costs, whether it's capital investment or other projects. I've always felt that there should be a close tie between tuition and instructional costs, and as we all know, that the university is involved in a lot of other activities beyond instruction, and I think this is a minor way that we can check some of the rising tuition costs that Representative Mahoney so strongly commented about a few moments ago.
Ms. Novak, did you get that? Could you read it back to the committee again so that we could understand it?
I'll send it down to the chair.
Madam Chair, the amendment is on page 79, line 29, after the period insert. The board must not use tuition revenue to pay for the university's share of the cost for projects approved under section 137.64.
Members have any questions regarding that language? Do you understand? Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson. So I've got a couple of questions. In the event that they don't raise the private funds, the building is not built, correct? With this amendment.
Representative Carlson.
Having watched the university and their fundraising activities through the years, I think they'll be able to accomplish that. If by some chance they wouldn't be able to accomplish that, they wouldn't be able to use tuition. Now, I suspect there's other approaches they could use. Wouldn't necessarily mean the abandonment of the project. Sometimes you scope of the project, but I think the project will probably move forward as it's planned, and I think the university will be able to raise the money.
Professor Mahoney, any further comments?
Yes. But if they can't raise the money, then they don't go forward unless they find some other way of funding them. The other question I would have, does this preclude them from starting the buildings before they have raised the money? Because if they can't use tuition, would that make a problem for them selling the bonds?
Well, Representative Mahoney, if they can't raise the funds, whether they start the building or not, that would be true whether it's the 20% or some other number. They can't raise the funds.
Madam Chair.
But they can't use tuition under this.
But thank you, Madam Chair. But the tuition would be a constant source of income versus going out raising the money from the...
The answer to the question is yes, but when I told you the history, Madam Chair, of this particular approach to funding facilities at the university, there was a lot of opposition to that whole approach in Minnesota House, and it wasn't until the very end of a conference committee many years ago when we were reaching a compromise, as Representative Fitzenreiter pointed out, that we even agreed that the cost of buildings would be shifted onto the higher ed system. And at the time, regardless of what kind of a facility it was, then the way we divided that out was to say tuition then would be used for instructional costs, because then you could at least argue or facilities that would be used for instruction, at least you could argue that there was a tie between what the students were receiving and the facilities that they would be in. When you start talking about research and the other enterprises at the university and you start applying tuition to them, I think then it raises the question about what the benefit is to the student. And it's my understanding that the facilities here before us tonight are purely research. I suspect there may be some graduate students in these facilities. I'm not sure. You've had some hearings. Maybe you could... I was left the impression a few moments ago, Madam Chair, that there were probably going to be no students or very few students, maybe some PhD candidates, I would guess.
And I'm wondering, Representative Carlson, do you see anyone in the audience that could maybe give you a little guidance on this? Is there any need for from the university to come back?
Madam Chair, I suspect if the university wants to comment on it, that would be fine with me. The question, I guess, is what if that was put before us by Representative Mahoney. I don't know if he wants to hear from the university on that question or not.
Representative Solberg.
No, that's okay.
Any further comments, Representative Mahoney? If that's the oral amendment, does anyone want... Representative Burns?
Yeah, I would ask the committee if they would consider hearing from the university, because I would like to hear from the university on this particular question.
Is there someone in the audience from the university who could give us a little input from your standpoint on the oral amendment as you've heard it so far? And if you'd like to have it reread, we could do that. Or do you understand the amendment? Please proceed, Mr. Fitchenreiter.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as I said earlier, and I'll just be clear, the university does not object to this amendment. My earlier comment simply said that when you do a budget at the University of Minnesota, you do a budget at your house. At the end of the day, you add up your expenses, and you look at the revenues you have, and at some point, it does have an impact on tuition. Now, we don't take tuition money and pay this bill. We will not. But at the end of the day, you're looking at the budget and the money you have, and it does still put pressure on what happens on tuition in a global sense. That's all I meant. We will not specifically use tuition to pay the debt on this bill, and the amendment's fine. I'm just telling you again, it does put an impact on the overall budget of the institution.
Thank you for that. Any further questions? Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Mayor, I think you realize that at least the majority of this committee, and I think probably the majority of this body, wants you to do a little extra fundraising on this effort, and that's the point we're trying to make, and I think you understand that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, absolutely.
Very good. Any further discussion on the oral amendment from Representative Carlson? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Hausman, do you have any concluding remarks?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is 2 years of work, a lot of testimony in this room, site visits, and we actually have a video that we've not used yet, so we'll still have to have a meeting somewhere along the line so you can see the work of Catherine Thompson. But as Representative Burns' question indicated, there's going to be a lot of work still to do on this bill. So we are not quite done yet. This morning I expressed thanks to staff. I must say now that what I feel is gratitude for all the members of this committee. Hard work, good attendance at tours, active participation, probing questions at every stage, active involvement of the members, and that I think has given us a better product. And so my closing comment is simply a thank you to all of the members of this committee.
Very good. And we do have one little question left from Representative Tinkelstedt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Hausman, I'm wondering if you can just outline the next several days I'm wondering when our committee members here might be able to get a engrossed version with these amendments, when that might be available, perhaps tomorrow or...
I'll give you the outline and then I'll see about that engrossment, which somebody else will have to tell me. As we're scheduled now, and we haven't checked if this is possible, to meet in the Finance Committee at 8 tomorrow morning. Then there is a session at noon for paperwork and Ways and Means. Representative Holberg at 4 o'clock.
Well, sure, I think we go into session at 4.
Oh.
And then I think it's a paper shuffling, so... Immediately after session, we'll try to tonight. I assume that'll be about 5 o'clock then, or thereabouts.
And then on Wednesday, we again need to process paper, and then on Thursday, it would be on the floor.
And Ms. Dyson, did you have anything to add to that, since she referred to you?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the amendments that have been adopted at this meeting will be engrossed in the revisor's office for a committee engrossment for the meeting at 8 a.m. tomorrow. So I expect it to be ready by 8 a.m. It probably will be ready at some point tonight, but I cannot speak for the revisor's office. So.
Very good. Thank you for that. So then Representative Hausman renews her motion that House File 380 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Meeting is adjourned.